All right. Welcome back, everybody, to the Quill and Query podcast. My name is Brandon Hall, and as always, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Ash. Ash, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. Sun is out. It's nice and warm. Spring is on its way, so I can't complain.
Yeah, we're definitely getting into the warmer seasons over here, too. So I can't decide if I'm a fan. Usually, I'm a creature of the cold. So.
Oh, are you? Interesting. I like every season individually, I think.
Yeah.
My mode. I'm like a late summer fall girl, but I love spring. It smells so good outside. It's like, oh, mm-hmm. Finally coming out of hibernation. So
yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
They definitely all have like their pros and cons for sure.
For sure. Allergies, maybe not.
Yeah, not that part. All right. Well, everyone who's joining us today, as you can see, it's just going to be Ash and I. We don't have a guest today, but we do have some fun topics to discuss as always. So, thanks for joining us. Whether you're joining the live or the recording, we love to have you here. We don't really have a lot of podcast updates, no audience questions or like indie releases to spotlight. So I'm just going to kind of gloss over those today. The only update I'm going to share is that Blades for Hire is available. If you didn't catch the last episode, that was our release special. If you haven't been watching the show and you don't know what Blades for Hire is, it is a dark fantasy mercenary anthology. There are 11 different stories. And all of the proceeds from the anthology go to the Charity Book Trust. So you can get your fantasy fix and you can support a good cause at the same time. It's available in ebook and paperback formats on Amazon right now. So be sure to check that out if you haven't already. And a special thank you, of course, to everyone who did check it out, did pick up a copy and has left a review or just spread the word. We appreciate it very much.
So exciting.
Yeah, it was. I got some of the author copies in the mail just the other day, and they very cool. I just have to send them out now, but they look very nice.
That's awesome. What's the difference between the author copies and the regular copies? I don't know if I know the difference.
Just the price. Like
Okay, cool.
on Amazon, if you publish a book through KDP, you can, and this is also helpful for anyone who's listening who hasn't published a book through KDP, they allow you to purchase copies of your own works at just the printing and shipping cost. So you can purchase them for like conventions or like to hand out to like friends and family or give to bookstores or really whatever you need. They don't even limit the quantity. Like I was on the order page and it said like you can order 999 at a time. I can't imagine that many books showing up to my doorstep.
House. You have to build a house from all the Blades for Hire books.
Yeah. I'll make a bookshelf out of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But,
I didn't know that. Good to know.
Yeah. So, it's nice because you can get your books at a pretty discounted rate and then take them with you wherever.
Awesome.
All right. Well, before we get into the fun topics we have for the week, Ash, as always, we do our reading updates on what we're currently reading, if anything. Sometimes we're not reading anything at the moment, but if I'm remembering correctly, it looks like you may have picked up a couple new books in one of your recent Instagram posts. So are you currently reading something new? Or?
So I am currently reading a bunch of different stuff. I did pick up for the first time. I haven't bought new books for funsies physically in so long. I've like bought discounted ones for book clubs and things like that, or I have a Kindle now, so I've been like using that. But it's been a while since I've like physically bought a book. So I got Shadow of the Gods, and then I got what was the other one? Something Apprentice. It's like really, anyway, two fantasies. I'm really excited to dive in. I'm also reading The Nightmare Novellas by J.N. Kindig. She's on here on Instagram and TikTok. She's fantastic. I'm really enjoying that. It's like very fun and spooky and hilarious and romancy, which is nice. She's very talented. So yeah, I've got a few things, a couple arcs that I'm just slowly working my way through. So yeah, what about you?
Very cool. Yeah, definitely not as prolific as you lately, but I have kind of stepped out of my fantasy reads for the moment, especially after being immersed in all the different worlds in like Blades for Hire for so long. I wanted to kind of have a palate cleanser, just something a little different. So I actually switched over to like my sci-fi TBR. Nice. And this is one I've had sitting on there for a while. I don't know if anyone can see it. Now my green screen doesn't green screen doesn't like it. It's a book set in the world of Cyberpunk 2077, the video game and board game. It's called No Coincidence. I'm still very early and I actually like just started it the other day, but it's very good so far. Like I said, early in the book, but I've always been a fan of like cyberpunk settings, and it's always something I wanted to explore in my writing in the future. I just admittedly am not as well read in cyberpunk books as I would like to be. I've played a lot of like cyberpunk games and watched a lot of films, but as far as books that share that kind of aesthetic, I feel like it's harder to find.
I would agree with that. I feel like cyberpunk is kind of like a burgeoning niche.
Yeah.
Also, hi, Nicole. It's good to see you.
Oh, nice. Nicole's here.
Yeah, I heard mixed reviews. I think Ross, my partner, played it for a bit. I heard mixed reviews about the video game. I didn't know the board game. Cyberpunk genre versus cyberpunk, the TM. Cyberpunk TM.
Yeah, I think the game Cyberpunk 2077 is based on like a tabletop RPG or a board game that was cyberpunk a different year, not 2077. It was like 2020 or something. It was like a relatively recent year, so they just like pushed it ahead because cyberpunk 2020 doesn't sound as good now that we're in 2025. It was originally something like board game, tabletop RPG, something along those lines. The video game was also a mixed experience for sure.
The concept is cool. I was like, oh yeah, I'm like really into this. Yeah, it's like very much like Blade Runner kind of style. Mm-hmm. So
yes, 100%.
Nice. Well, good. I'm glad you're mixing it up. It's always nice and refreshing.
Yes. Once in a while, I need like a palate cleanser. Even though I love reading fantasy, helps take a break from it every now and then.
Yeah. I'm like, I need to read like a history book. I need to like read something not fantasy for a bit, which is nice. And that's why book clubs exist, because it like, you know, helps you reach different genres. But yeah, anytime it's cozy, comfy, I'm like, fantasy.
Also, Nicole, you are awesome for having read the Halo books in middle school. I read them a little bit later, but Halo was the first sci-fi franchise I was exposed to. So loved the first three books. I think they're all by Eric Nyland, like The Flood, First Strike, Contact Harvest. What's the other one? I'm forgetting the other one, but they were all great. Especially if you like played the games at that time, it was an experience. Huge.
Pretty sure we performed like the Halo theme song in middle school band for one of our band performances.
That's awesome.
And then I think around that same time, like Battlestar Galactica was on Sci-Fi. It was like, that was a good show. My parents were really into that. It's too adult for me to watch fully, but then I watched it later on and it was good. So anyway, love a good sci-fi.
Yeah, sci-fi is like my next favorite genre, next fantasy for sure.
Yeah, I would say the same.
All right. Well, like I said, we're going to gloss over the other sections because we don't have any updates there. So I guess we can just get right into our topics for the week. We have some fun ones, some maybe controversial ones, not too hot, but still maybe a little bit of a hot take in there.
Cool.
All right. So the first one we're going to start with is we're going to circle back to the conversation around AI. I know we've touched on this kind of from a lot of different angles in the past. So this is kind of a relatively new to us anyway, topic surrounding AI on the show. But with the rise of AI being used in like creative pursuits for writing or art, you know, as much as I think most of us are against that, I've noticed kind of an equal trend in both people using AI and then people kind of accusing people of using AI falsely a lot of times, but sometimes there is merit to it as well. But it seems like you can't really post something without, like, whether it's a piece of art or a piece of writing or something these days, without a disclaimer saying I did not use AI, or like something showing off your process. And I think it makes it a little daunting for creatives to share their work more than it already is. Also, sorry for everyone that I'm like glitching out on the TikTok. I don't know if I am facing out of reality, but Yeah, they heard us talking about the cyberpunk.
They said no.
Yeah. But yeah, I wanted to get your thoughts on kind of the, this word sounds bad, I just didn't know what else to call it, but like these AI witch hunts and kind of the need to prove innocence or like the absence of AI in your work kind of immediately. I just kind of wanted to hear what you think of this, because I don't think we've touched on this specific angle of generative AI yet.
Yeah, it's hard because it's like everything uses AI now. Like even things that we don't really know are using it, or maybe are not aware are using it. And I guess like I don't know. I'm against it when you're using it to create, essentially. I think, you know, like a spell check, like a lot of spell checkers are AI now. And they'll recommend certain things, but I don't know if we have, yeah, this is a tricky one. What do you think? Let me see where you're at and then I'll follow.
Yeah. That's a hard one because like, I understand where people are coming from when they, you know, throw those AI accusations around, because it does come from a good place of wanting like things like art and writing, to kind of stay pure to, you know, the human creation, not being taken over by people who don't really put any effort into something. They just kind of put a prompt out and then they share the result. But I think I'm kind of in a similar boat where it's, I feel like a lot of people draw a very black and white line with AI, and I'm not really on either side of that. Like, I'm not all AI is good, I'm not all AI is bad, because like you said, it comes in many different forms. Like spell check is a form of AI. So
yeah, right.
Comes down to like how nuanced are we getting with that question, and what types of AI are we talking to? Like, we're strictly speaking generative AI, so like something generating text for you that you then put in your book, or generating art for you that you then like sell or use as promo material. I think I can pretty much say I am against using that, especially if you're like selling something. Not a big fan of selling something that was created with AI, because a lot of times I lost my train of thought there for a minute. A lot of times it's done dishonestly. Like someone will put something out that's created by AI, but they won't add the disclaimer like this was made by AI. But yeah, it's tricky because AI comes in a lot of forms. Generative AI is not the only type of AI that exists. There is helpful AI. Like, for full transparency on the show, there's a lot of AI audio enhancement tools that I use for Quill and Query that just like Riverside just automatically uses them. I don't have to do anything. But it takes like hours of work out of engineering the audio and making sure the setup is perfect and everything. To just make sure the show is great quality for everybody who's listening. But yeah, I think it's difficult for a creative putting their work out there, because I don't think you should have to add that disclaimer like right off the bat that this wasn't made with AI. I don't think people should be kind of like, I don't like the guilty until proven innocent mentality with it.
Agreed.
You know, definitely with something that seems blatantly obvious that's AI, I do think like should be called out if it's not being properly, like, what's the right word I'm looking for, if there's not a proper disclaimer there. But I also am not a fan of just calling everything AI and waiting for the creators to come out and like show their process and show that they didn't use AI throughout the creative process, because I don't think expecting everyone to do that is also entirely fair. But I do understand where the fear comes from. Sorry.
No. I think all of what you're saying is totally valid. I think I'm also in a bit of the gray area in terms of like creatively using AI. It is not a black and white issue. And I think it's a little bit easier to say with visual components. Like if you go on Pinterest, right? A lot of the pins now are like AI generated stuff that people have uploaded. And sometimes I have a hard time determining what is or isn't AI. So if I use it, you know, if I use a photo in an Instagram post when I'm writing, you know, sharing something about A Filthy Hunger, and then someone goes, hey, that's AI, and I didn't catch it, am I guilty of that, or did the system play me, you know? And then I can then go, like, I can either take it down or re-edit my post to say, like, includes AI art, but I don't like I don't want to do that, right? I don't want to, like, have to then backtrack and delete, but I will if that's the case, you know, if that's what the consensus is, I guess. But, you know, there's a lot of people who are really quick to draw, to you're guilty until proven innocent. Luckily, I haven't seen too many instances of that, but, you know, got into an argument with someone on TikTok back in the day about, like, Grammarly. I was like, well, I use Grammarly. I turn the suggestions off, but, you know, it spell checks, and they were like, that's AI. And I was like, well, I know, like, their system is trained off of AI in certain capacities, but I don't think it's necessarily using AI. And then they blocked me, and I was like, okay, cool. Well, this could have been a really nuanced conversation and have been, like, a really good eye-opening, you know, discussion. But yeah, some people are very quick to do. So I don't know. I think we're going to be entering a world. I think one of our viewers here was like, Penguin Random House did a copyright page to declare they are against AI. I think it's good to outright say that, right? If you are a creative using or existing in spaces where AI is becoming more common. Mm. But yeah, I mean, my partner Ross, when he does his photos, if he edits it, like, not even uses AI or whatever, but if he just uses a program to edit a photo and he uploads it to Instagram, it will, like, automatically mark it as AI. And he's had, like, a hell of a time trying to be like, but it's not. Like, I haven't. Yes.
That's frustrating.
You know, it's like it can, like, tell that it's been edited, so it assumes it's AI or whatever. So we're in this, like, really weird new realm of, like, who's using it? Who's using it ethically, right? Who's using it in the wrong way? And I guess for me, unless it's specifically obvious, I'm not going to be hunting down people using AI.
Yeah.
I think we had this conversation earlier, too. It's like, if you're, like, someone who is extremely, like, who is not able to pay someone to do a cover, and you have zero experience with any digital formatting or anything like that, you know, and you use AI for your book cover or whatever layout, you know, it's like, that person deserves to be able to put their work out into the world and using the tools at their disposal. You know, where does that line get drawn? It's like, well, I can't afford to hire somebody, but I also don't want to use non-copyrighted, and I'm new to copyright. And, you know, it can be, I think it can be nuanced. I don't have an answer.
Yeah.
If you use ChatGPT to research something really nuanced, does that count as using AI to help write your book?
Yeah, that's an interesting question too, that one of our previous guests, I think it was the one that I had when you were sick, Atlas, we talked a little bit about, but he was having a back and forth on, I believe it was Threads, about the use of, like, ChatGPT for research purposes and things like that. So that's also, like, a very interesting, nuanced topic as well. I do think for, like, a big publisher house, like our one viewer said, just kind of putting out, like, a blanket statement, like, we're not using generative AI in our writing or our cover. I think that's really great for, like, especially a big corporation to do, because I think that's where a lot of people suspect some of the use to kind of become predatory and used as like cost cutting. But so hearing that a big publisher house, you know, put out a statement like that is reassuring, and I think that's totally fine. And I think even as, like, an individual creator, if you're an indie author or something, and you just put out, like, a page on your website or your Instagram, I think that's also totally fine. If you want to say, like, I don't use generative AI in my writing or in my promo materials or whatever, I think that's all great. If that's how you want to kind of avoid that conversation and not have to, like, do your process videos every time you upload something or kind of a long-winded way to say it's a very nuanced topic that I think gets painted as very black and white when it's definitely not.
No, but I think I'm right there with you, and I think hopefully viewers can understand that too. And it's, if you find yourself in, there are a few issues that I'm very black and white on, you know, that I'm like, nope, this is not right. This one, I think because it's ever shifting and changing, it's okay to not have a solid, you know, answer.
Yeah.
I'm pretty much against AI and like art. You know, mm-hmm. if you're using it to make art and then trying to sell that art and then like
totally
on top of that art, I'm like, no.
Yeah, agreed. I think that's a great point to end on with that topic, so people don't like misconstrue our what we're talking about. Like when we say AI is a nuanced topic and things like that, we're not saying the act of putting an image prompt into Midjourney and then selling that work. Yes. Is a nuanced topic. We're pretty, I think, on the same page against that.
Yeah.
Same thing if you like put a prompt into ChatGPT and say, write me a book. I'm pretty sure we're totally against that. Also, I don't think you would get a very good result if you tried that, but feel free to prove me wrong with that if you think you can. but I'm sure we'll be talking about AI as an emerging technology, for many years, but I think that's a good note to end on for that topic.
Agreed. Or else we'll spend the whole episode talking right. about the nuance of AI.
Yeah, that's like a dedicated episode topic, I think, for the future, maybe.
Maybe. We'll have to have an expert come on.
For sure, yeah.
Tell us about it.
All right, well, moving into another topic, kind of shifting away from the technological side. This was actually a news post that came on my Reddit feed. So I wanted to get your thoughts and maybe some people in the chat. But recently, a popular fantasy author, some of you may know, his name is Terry Brooks, announced his retirement and indicated that he was going to be passing on his Shannara series to a fellow author named Delilah S. Dawson. So I kind of wanted to tackle this topic like we tackle many other topics from both perspectives of like the writer side and then the reader side. So I guess we'll start with the writer perspective, but what are your thoughts on writers who do this, where they pass on say an incomplete work or like a fantasy world to a fellow author that they trust can carry on their vision? And I know something like that would be well in the future for both of us, but is that something you could ever even see yourself entertaining at some point?
I don't know if I would ever have a series that large enough to be passing on, unless I was old and someone else wanted to pick it up. I don't think I would be against that. So I think some pretty famous examples in history are like the Dune saga, right? Like Dune ended up getting passed off to what's his name?
The son, right? Brian?
Yeah,
Herbert.
Son. You know, J.R. Tolkien, his son kind of took up the mantle and helped to edit and like kind of be someone like, I'm also having a really, it's been a long day. Ross got
it. It's totally cool.
So any brain farts that I have is just anyway.
No worries.
J.R. Tolkien's son, Christopher Tolkien. Let's see, who else? Terry Pratchett, I think, also had a similar, like a couple people finished up. Anyway, the point is, I think this is something that does happen a lot in really large series. I'm okay with it. My nuanced take is that if you're ghostwriting, if you're having someone ghostwrite for you, that's a no-no because you're passing off that work as your own. And while I think the ideas are your own, I wouldn't call you a writer if you're having someone ghostwriting your stories for you.
Yeah.
So, one, I think it's awesome that if you are done, you're retired and you don't want to write anymore. Not to say that he probably won't have a hand in any specifics or helping the new author along. But I also feel like an author really has to choose the person well. And I trust an author who's willing to do that and pass off such a long... I've never read the Shannara Chronicles, but I know it's like a really big series. So, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with choosing your... what do you call them? Protege, you know, to continue on your legacy. I think that's really cool. And to have faith in a person to carry that mantle is awesome. I'm in full support. And also to have it be a woman, I think is really, really great. Yeah, that's my take. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm in a similar boat where, you know, I think most of us as creatives would naturally be very selective of who we're passing off our work to. So when I see an author that does do this, I generally believe that they've taken their time, you know, to carefully vet who they're giving their work to, because we're all very protective as creatives of the worlds we create. So, and I've very rarely seen it go wrong, I feel like. Like the examples you mentioned with Tolkien and Frank Herbert, and I think even Wheel of Time, when it got passed to Brandon Sanderson, was still received pretty well. So generally, I think they end up choosing their successors pretty well. So generally, I don't think I'm against it either as a reader or a writer. You know, it's coming from the author, the visionary of these worlds and these stories. So I expect that they're choosing what they think is the best path forward. So
now I think posthumously, if someone gets chosen after an author has passed away, and there was no prior written consent and or indication that it's okay for somebody to take, that's when I fear that it's a money grab concept. So that's when I'm like, oh, maybe not. It's I don't know if there's any example of that, but that's when I would have some hesitancy, because it's like, oh, do the author really want this? It's like if G.R. Martin were to die, you know, without finishing all of his projects, and then he had named a successor, and then someone kind of just stepped into that role, that'd be a little strange, I think. Unless you didn't tell anybody, and like no one could tell the difference, but I'm sure that wouldn't be the case.
Actually, on the topic of Martin, he has touched on that topic before, where as of right now, he does not want anyone to take over his work, even if it's unfinished. I don't know if his mindset's changed, because I think that that was from an interview that was almost a decade ago. So maybe he's changed his mind since then, but not publicly. So I definitely have the same mind there. Like if it's against the author's wishes, I really couldn't be less interested. Like I don't want to see a Winds of Winter from someone that was not chosen specifically by George R.R. Martin. That just would not be something I would care to read, to be honest. But
I'm right there with you.
As long as it's in line. Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go.
I was just going to say, as long as it's with in line with the author's wishes and vision for the world, I'm totally on board when they kind of pass on their legacy to another writer.
I agree with that. As Vorian in the chat said, it's due to copyright law, which the author's relatives will inherit the intellectual property. Yeah, that's a whole separate, that's a really good point too. It's a very big legal discussion that I don't have any experience in, really. It's like, if you don't name a successor, but your intellectual property gets passed on, the copyright gets passed on to somebody, then they can technically do what they want with it, I'm assuming. In certain cases, maybe not all. But that would be a good topic to kind of do some more research on.
Yeah, for sure. That was, I have since forgotten a lot of the information, but there was, when I was kind of selecting my pen name to use, I was exploring like the legal differences between just using your legal name and then using a pen name, and how that affects like copyright protections and inheritance and things like that. So at least when I checked, I don't know if, you know, it's been a while, I don't remember all the information, but like writing under a pen name, for example, grants you less time protection before your work, say, goes into like public domain, as opposed to using your legal name. So I'm curious to see how that is affected by like having a successor chosen, or having someone that can inherit your intellectual property. Definitely have to look into that. For
that would be a good second,
like a future episode.
Yeah, totally.
All right. Well, actually, on that topic, I think we touched on it a little bit, but how now, coming at it from the reader perspective, we touched on like George R.R. Martin and how I would feel about that. But if you saw one of your favorite authors pass on willingly their works, it sounds like you'd be pretty on board as a reader to stick around.
Oh, yeah. I think again, it's like I trust the author to, you know, especially if it's one that I love, I trust the author already. And so if they say, here's my successor, they're going to continue on the series, then there's nothing wrong with giving it a chance. And then if I read it and I'm like, whoa, full departure from what I was expecting, then of course it's just like, oh, okay, well, maybe not for me, maybe not the writer that I expected, but that's not, as we like to say, that's none of my business.
Yeah.
So, you know, it would, if it fails, which I don't know of any instance where it has, or where it's super obvious, then okay, you know, that sucks, but it's, I don't have any stake in the game other than a lover of the art. And so if the artist chooses to do whatever they want, then yeah, you know, that's their prerogative and I gotta put my faith in them. So yeah, as a reader, it doesn't really bother me.
We got another comment from, is it Asaforia? Sorry if I'm pronouncing your name completely wrong. But, or you can turn it into a trademark and sell it to corporate like what Stanley and Alan Moore did. Oh, yeah, okay. I'm sure.
So many different ways you can do it, which is crazy.
That way you won't have to have six. Yeah, make a ton of money too, I'm sure, depending on your intellectual property. But yeah, the copyright law is something that I'm not an expert in for sure. So
not at all.
All right. Well, before we get into the rest of our topics, Ash, it's time for our work in progress check-in. It's been a while since we did one of these, I think. So yeah. I know you've been posting quite frequently lately about more like writing and reading related topics over on Instagram. So I'm curious to hear if you have any exciting progress updates on your works in progress.
I do. So I've got the first part of A Filthy Hunger. I might have mentioned this a couple weeks ago, but I have it, the general outline, and now I'm working my way through the like more detailed outline. Sorry, one second. I think Ross is being a little too loud. Hey, Ross. You're a bit too loud for me. Thank you. Sorry, you can cut that out of the recording.
It's all good.
Yeah, so I'm able to get a detail. I'm working on the detailed part one, which feels good. I'm kind of not where I want to be timeline-wise in terms of, like, getting things done. But on a side note, I have entered into a couple of writing challenges. So I've been working on those. Some, like, week-long 2,000 words or less, which is so hard for me, as you know. But anyway, so I've been doing side little writing practices as well. So not a lot for A Filthy Hunger, but continuing to kind of exercise my writing skills. And it's been really fun. It's been encouraging me to just kind of like do something a little bit every day. I don't know if you know Stephen Pressfield, but he's like a writer and also kind of just like a motivational person for writers. My dad got me his, it's essentially like a daily motivational thing where he talks about his process of writing and also some just like, this is how you get through resistance or whatever. And it comes with little notebooks every day. I've been like write journaling, I guess, like writer journaling or whatever. Anyway, so I've been doing a lot more, trying to stay consistent. That's been feeling good. I tend to ramp up in spring and summer once the cold and the darker, you know, out of the way.
Yeah, so, yeah. For sure.
What about you?
Yeah, definitely just been trying to get back into the act of writing regularly, whether that's for A Night of Knives or just something else where the inspiration strikes. I've been doing a lot of like other short stories in flash fiction.
Oh, cool.
But like anyone who saw my story today, like you and I were talking about earlier, I did do some outlining earlier today. I'm working on kind of expanding the outline for A Night of Knives as well. So just really trying to get back immersed into that world and then just the act of writing, because the past few months have been a lot of publishing and formatting and stuff like that for Blades for Hire. So yeah, mostly just trying to get back into the groove of like being creative again and not focusing on the business aspect. So taking it slow, but kind of like your keyword for the year, right? Consistency, trying to focus on that a little bit.
Yeah,
no, like massive word count updates or anything like that. But it's sorry, what were you gonna ask?
No, I was gonna say any forward movement is good forward movement. So, you know.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's kind of where I'm trying to keep myself this year. Is just as long as I'm making progress consistently. Cool, cool.
Awesome.
Well, yeah. And we did just put out the anthology, so it's okay if there's also like a little dip between now and.
But the momentum got me going. I think, you know, it was good. Once that was finished and out into the world, I kind of felt like, not that it was a bad process by any means, but I was like, okay, that chapter is closed.
Right.
And then now I can like recenter and do a few fun things while, refocusing on the novel. So seems to be going pretty well for both of us, which I love.
Yeah, I totally get that feeling because it's just like having a completed project now that we can't like go back and make massive edits to and stuff like that is it's a bit of a relief.
Yeah, no, totally. And I've kind of felt myself like a little bit more, I don't know if you feel this way with yours at all, but you know, mine is like a multi-point of view. So I'm almost like super eager to get them both in the same room in the novel. So I'm, like that kind of drive is moving me to like work on it more than I have in the past. And really just finding joy and just sitting down and at least getting, and I've been trying to do that, just like even if it's like a couple bullet points of the of the outline, like that's two more than you had yesterday, or you know, so all good things.
I do like the mention of like writing towards something, because it's not necessarily two POVs meeting for me, but it's like writing towards the like the big revelations and stuff like that. Kind of keep me going, because I can't really skip ahead to those, because there's a lot of building up to it that I kind of need to do in my own mind, like as I'm writing. I really need to know all the details as I'm getting there, but knowing that I get to eventually write like that really fun part definitely keeps me motivated.
Good carrot.
For sure. All right, well, on the topic of like fantasy, we have a lot of fantasy specific topics to get into after our more like publishing focused topics. So this is the first one I'm going to jump into. This is this is another one that I saw on like the fantasy Reddit, where people were talking about kind of self-imposed rules, or like not explicit rules, but things that a lot of fantasy tends to stick to, or like unspoken guidelines for writing that a lot of authors pass on to each other. So this one is specifically about like writing about the afterlife or life after death in fantasy. So I thought this would be a fun topic to explore. So I guess this is news to me. I think I've kind of subconsciously been in this same camp of where these people are at, but I never really knew it was like an agreed upon rule amongst a group of people. But it apparently, to a lot of authors, exploring the afterlife in fantasy is like a big no-go for them. So, I actually was very curious to get your thoughts on this, because I found that very interesting, because I feel like I've read a lot of fantasy works that don't shy away from it, but, I can also think of a lot that do keep it very mysterious. And so I was kind of wondering where your preference lies, both in your reading and your writing. Like, do you like it when it's more mysterious and there's not like those, I guess, explicit answers to what happens to someone after they die? And do you think that like cheapens the impact of character deaths or anything like that? Or do you find yourself more in the side of, no, I like to see that stuff. I like to see what happens, you know, of course, if it's like done well. But yeah, which kind of side of that fence do you fall on?
Such a great question. I've never really thought about it before. In A Filthy Hunger, there is, so that's maybe the best way to start. There is a bit of less of like an afterlife and more of an other, right? It's less of a finality, though there is the end. But but there is like, okay, I guess I have to explain this better. I enjoy the walking the line between knowing there is an ending. Like when somebody dies, for me, I like the fact that there's like no bringing them back, right? That the other characters have to deal with that loss in whatever way they do, and know that there isn't any way that you can bring them back, unless you're like a necromancer and that's the whole point of the whole thing.
Yeah.
So I like when authors walk that, like, maybe, for instance, there are gods involved and they exist in this kind of other space, and death for them is different. And death for mortals can be something other. So I like a little bit of the play of like, you can expect to not just like it all go black, like end and that's it. But I do like it when fantasy authors impose that kind of rule of there are a few authors that are popular now that kind of, it's almost like you're bringing them back over and over again. And there's no risk involved because, like, either somebody gets saved at the last minute or they die and they get brought back. And it's just kind of like, okay, but then, you, like you said, you cheapen the concept of death and dying. So I love a well thought out character death. And I know, like, religion and faith plays, like, a pretty good part in a lot of fantasy. Like, there are lots of different fantasy religions, you know, whatever, like, the, at least that exists within the book is what I mean. So I like exploring what that means to different characters in all these different ways. So yeah, I think a balance. Yeah. I like the finality, but I like, you know, I like the potential of something other without being like, oh, welcome back to the land of the living.
Yes.
I think that's just like a bad plot device. What about you?
Totally.
I'm curious to see what you think.
Yeah, I am going to actually come right back to that question because if you just heard a moment ago, was interrupted by the puppy. So I'll make sure I cut this out of the recording, but I got to contain her real quick.
Yeah, go for it.
All right. Sorry for that interruption, but you won't even catch it in the recording. Nicole wants to know how you're doing, Ash.
I'm doing great. Just hanging out, taking a little break before we get back into it.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Cool.
I'm
great. All right. Well, we were on Afterlife in Fantasy, so... Yeah, I think I'm in the same camp where it's like, I don't, as long as it's done well, I don't have any problems exploring it. Like you said, as long as you're conscious not to cheapen the impact of character death, like if you're bringing people back over and over and things like that. Yeah, I think it can be done well. I don't subscribe to that rule at all.
Well, I think it can be done like so well, like with G.R. Martin and like, you know, Catelyn Stark, which never got put in the book or in the show. And I'm so pissed that they didn't go down that route. But like, you know, spoilers, I guess, for those. It's been decades and decades. You guys just whatever, get over it. But, you know, like her coming back as like this like kind of monster-esque zombie as a way to like help her children or help save the world. Like, I think that's awesome, right? Because it worked within the parameters of what we knew and what we know this world can exist in. And, you know, yeah, so I that's kind of what I mean. I'm like, yeah, as long as it exists within the realm of possibility and it's not just like you get to come back.
Yeah, totally. Sorry, I'm muted because the dog is still going.
That's okay.
Sorry, the process of moving has limited my recording space. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Again, really apologize for the puppy. Like I said, guys, I am moving, so my space is getting limited, but we'll be back on track next episode. And for anyone who's listening to the recording, it'll be completely cut out, so we're all good. Just if you're watching us live, sorry that you had to bear with that.
It's okay.
Really apologize.
Also, we have to say happy birthday, belated birthday, to our
Nicole. It was your birthday.
Nicole,
that's right. I saw
happy belated birthday. I don't think I saw that on Sunday. Don't even know what I was doing. I couldn't even remember.
No, you know what it was. It totally slipped my brain that it was her twin's birthday. Now I totally shouldn't register that that's also her birthday.
I'm so bad. I'm like, oh, cool, heart, and then I move on. I didn't even register. But anyway, happy belated to our number one fan.
Yeah. Also, Nicole, off topic, but super glad to hear you're okay and you've acquired a new car and everything. I was following that, so I'm sending you thoughts and prayers, but glad to hear you're doing okay. All right, so we were on the Afterlife in Fantasy, right, Ash? Okay.
Yes. And you may continue with your thoughts and feelings, if you'd like.
Yeah. I don't think I had a whole lot to add on that. Just I don't like hard like rules in fantasy that say, or really writing in general that say you can't do this, because I think there's always an exception to that rule that you can point to, like. Anytime I've seen someone say you can't do this in your writing, or you can't use these words, or you can't touch on this theme, I almost always immediately go to find some work that was published that contradicts that. And it's usually pretty easy to do so. I don't like those types of rules that are very restrictive. I think, with the caveat that like you do it well, like anything, and it can make for a great story. I think in my own writing, I do tend to stay more on the side of not touching on that stuff, like the afterlife specifically. and what happens after death, I just don't really get into it a whole lot. Like, as far as confirming anything, I guess, like, I have a lot of religious themes about what people think happens after death, and things like that.
Oh,
but I don't really, I feel like I'm a little similar to, maybe not saying in quality by any means, but like in regards to like how Martin touches on religion and how all of the different, you know, groups have their own philosophy of what happens after you die. This is totally separate from like the characters who do come back, like Catelyn and, you know, spoilers again, but the characters that we touched on. So yeah.
Also, sorry. Like, I've never quite understood, like you said, like, the minute you step into telling people what they can and can't do within their own created worlds, it's just kind of like, why are you doing that? Especially, I understand when it's like maybe literary fiction or something like that, where it's like way more work can be, you know, 8 out of 10 times grounded in our shared reality or the shared reality of a different culture or something like that. Like, yeah, you can't just be like saying something off the cuff and like exploring whatever if it's not already established, I guess. But if we're talking fantasy and sci-fi, I'm like, what do you mean? Like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Right.
Literally all made up. So I don't know when you're like, you can't touch on death, or like, you can't, you have to have this, that. And it's like, no, I don't think so. I like,
yeah,
don't actually think so. Yeah.
All right. Well, moving into a little bit. Yeah, that one was a little bit more like of a serious topic. So we're going to switch over to kind of a more fun one for a minute here. But my video is glitching out. We're getting all the issues today.
That's okay. It's like our easing back into just us episode and fun.
All right. Well, okay. The fun topic I had for us was monsters in fantasy. I think we've touched on like different creatures in fantasy a little bit, but I wanted to dive into this one, totally not because I've been playing Monster Hunter Wilds, but I was curious to hear, what are some of your favorite creatures in fantasy? And then also, are there any like themes or categories of creatures that you find yourself drawn to more than others?
Okay, well, monsters in fantasy are like my favorite thing ever. I love them so much. I grew up on a lot of like folklore, and in particular like fae related stuff, and I was like super into like Irish and Scottish mythology. So, you know, and then eventually like expanded because I was like, this is very Eurocentric when I got into college or whatever. But some of my favorites, well, my number one favorite is a Barghest, which is like this like Scottish, kind of the best way to describe it is like a demon dog or like a demon wolf that takes like a very large bear like dog form, like Hound of Baskerville kind of whatever. So that's one of my favorites. I also really love selkies. I'm not a huge ocean or water person, but the concept of like a creature being able to like shed its skin and become something new has always fascinated me. So I'm like a huge selkie fan as well. So I could talk about creatures all day. I'm a huge proponent of them. Now for A Filthy Hunger, it's been interesting because I like the realm of my world, I don't want to borrow from already kind of existing creatures, but I do, because I don't want to just like come up with something and then pass it off when those things already exist, if that makes sense. Like, like one of the characters, his name is Baig, and he is an imp, right? Like, if you don't know what an imp is, it's kind of like this like small like gnarled creature, very goblin like. Yeah, so you know, he's an imp, and I'm like, I feel like that's, I'm struggling with that personally in my own writing, because I want to come up with some new and fresh stuff, which I do have in mind, but I also enjoy borrowing from different cultures and like, you know, things that are already existing in like a mythos. So yeah, I'm a huge, I forgot the rest of your question. I can do that too.
No, it's okay. It was really just about like, what are your favorite creatures, and then what like categories are you drawn to when it comes to like monsters in fantasy. So I think you answered it pretty well.
Yeah. I guess like the what type is more like earth-based, right? Like things that have existed or come from something that happened via like Mother Nature rather than something that is created or, you know, comes from something like celestial. I'm less of like a celestial girl and more like a, yeah, like they came before humans or they came, they were created because of them and the earth spat it up somewhere or, you know, whatever. So I'm like a, yeah, I'm like an earthy girl. Yeah, what about you?
Yeah, that's a tricky question for me as far as the categories of creatures go, because I feel like I like all of them. So yeah, I love fantasy because, I mean, for many reasons, but also because of like the wide variety of creatures and wildlife and settings and everything that you get. So
yeah.
I don't know if I have like a favorite category, but I am really drawn to like things that are more Lovecraftian in nature or like Eldritch, okay. Stuff like that. Those are always my favorites, but like they're great. But like I said, I like all fantasy creatures. I would say the only one that I'm like getting sick of is dragons, oddly enough. Just because
the resurgence.
I feel like dragons kind of go through this, like they fluctuate in popularity. Like everyone loves them for a while and then we get tired of them. I think after like A Song of Ice and Fire, which has dragons that I love, I'm just kind of dragoned out at the moment. But
yeah.
Another category that I really like, actually, now that I'm thinking on it, are like sea monsters. So like things like krakens, sirens, and those are always fun. Yeah, I feel like those aren't as widely explored in the books that I've read. So I do like when they do show up. But like I said, I like all monsters in fantasy. I think The Witcher has some of like the coolest.
The best. Yes. No, totally. I like the ones that are dangerous. And I
think
like dragons have been softened to this like tameable, which is the whole point, right? Like at least it became the whole point versus in like the Lord of the Rings, which it was, you know, this like scary, terrifying creature that needed to be felled. Yeah, with like G.R.R. Martin, I think with, you know, Daenerys being able, like the mother of dragons, like the concept of taming the dragon has always been something that fantasy authors have played with. But yeah, I think with like the advent of Yaros and Fourth Wing, they're kind of having a popularity moment again. And I like my monsters scary. I like my monsters dangerous and like threatening, if subtly so. So at least in my writing, I try and explore the concept like monsters cannot be tamed and you cannot control them, right? They're very much like keep at a distance because they are not of, you know, the mortal world or whatever. So I feel you about the dragons. I'm a huge dragon fan. Dragon Riders of Pern is one of my favorite series, even though those are technically like wyverns, I think. Another problem I have in a lot of like fantasy shows and books, they're like, this dragon with its hind legs and its wings. I'm like, that's a wyvern. Have four legs and they have wings. It's like, anyway, it's just one of those like annoying things that only nerds would know.
Totally get it. Yeah, I've seen that that mentioned on, especially like when it comes to the Game of Thrones dragons.
So
everyone's like, actually, that's a wyvern. I just want to do a check and make sure my audio is coming good through for you on Riverside. Yes. Good.
It's
okay.
It's still choppy for sure, but the audio is great.
Okay. Audio is good, but video's choppy or? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it seems to be having technical difficulties, so I just wanted to make sure we're good there. As long as the audio is good, I can work with the video, but cool. Well, switching gears a little bit, I wanted to talk about the term dark fantasy. This is one that I never thought would be like up for discussion or debate, I suppose, because to me, the meaning has always been kind of clear, but as we've been marketing Blades for Hire, and I've just noticed in bookish spaces in general, when I talk about dark fantasy, I get a lot of questions from people that say, what is dark fantasy? What does that mean? So I thought this would be a good place to kind of dive into that topic a little bit and talk about what dark fantasy means to each of us. So like what kind of tone or setting or, you know, story we're describing when we pitch something as dark fantasy. So I guess I'll let you lead with this question. What would you describe dark fantasy as to you? Like if you, you know, when we say a dark fantasy anthology, or if you were to describe A Filthy Hunger that way, what exactly do you mean by that?
Yeah, so I do describe A Filthy Hunger as a dark high fantasy, or a dark fantasy. I think it's been interesting because I haven't ever like put a definition to it out loud before, but I think unlike grimdark, where everything sucks and everyone dies, right? Yeah. Or it's just like, it's just really heavy all the time. I think dark fantasy isn't necessarily, if it's a spectrum, isn't necessarily all the way to grimdark, but it's not the C.S. Lewis, Tolkien, Harry Potter fantasy that is that kind of like umbrella term. I find dark fantasy to deal with really tough themes. There is potential for a happy ending, but at a steep cost. And usually like violence as a movement forward, hard decisions that have really dark consequences. And when I say dark, I mean consequences that affect multiple people in very visceral, life-changing ways. So yeah, I hope that's a vague, concise version of what I think dark fantasy is. It's like the themes are very heavy, and there's no promise of a happy ending for anybody.
Yeah, I think that encapsulates it perfectly. I like the distinction between dark fantasy and grimdark fantasy too. As I was kind of trying to gauge how I would answer this question before the show, the distinction there was something I was struggling to put into words, and I found a very good post about the difference between saying something's dark fantasy versus saying it's grimdark. And where, like you said, grimdark, everything kind of sucks. There's a very nihilistic worldview to grimdark that's kind of core to that. Dark fantasy, I feel like you said, is more about the themes and like the tone and the setting. So dark fantasy doesn't necessarily mean everything sucks all the time, like grimdark, but it does mean you are dealing with dark and heavy themes, you know, a lot of very human stories and characters. Mm-hmm. So, it's like you said, it's difficult to put into words, but also if you are finding yourself asking that question, Google is great for this. It gives you a lot of good examples of, what's like dark fantasy, but maybe not quite grimdark. But yeah, I think that's the distinction between like dark fantasy and regular fantasy, or dark fantasy and grimdark, is what kind of themes are you touching on and dealing with? I think that's the biggest difference between maybe like those three categories there.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think in like popular culture, I would consider like, not just because it's in the name, but like a dark crystal would be dark fantasy to me, where like things are bleak and rough and scary and, you know, the heroes win out, but there's a cost. I'd say like Labyrinth would be like fantasy.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a grimdark version in popular culture of grimdark fantasy, but I think The Witcher is also like a dark fantasy, right? Like, mm-hmm. And you're just trying to provide examples of that. But I think that's a good description of dark fantasy. It's my preferred.
Same. I don't know if I'm like able to write complete grimdark. I'll have to, you know, see. But I dark fantasy is kind of where I find myself describing most of my work. So.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I don't know. I think grimdark is a relatively recent term. I would have to go to Google to see how far back, but I think it's like within the last 20 years, grimdark, with the advent of like online forums and online spaces becoming a place where people explore grimdark more. I have to have a little hope.
Just at least a little, at least a little bit.
Just a sliver.
All right. Well, on the topic of like recent trends in fantasy, this is one I'm curious to see if you've noticed as much in your reading as much as I've noticed in mine, because I know we both read a lot of fantasy, but I noticed we also do tend to go to like different corners of fantasy sometimes. So it over in like the books that I'm reading, so like with Joe Abercrombie or authors who are more recent, like Richard Swan, there's a major trend in like industrialization of fantasy settings. Mm-hmm. So kind of writing like an initial series in that medieval fantasy sandbox, but then revisiting that world at a later time where the technology has sort of progressed, and you're kind of in like an industrial revolution, but still in that fantasy world, and you're seeing how that technology mm-hmm. kind of carries that world forward. So I was just curious to know if you've noticed this trend in like your own reading as well, and then how you feel about it both as a reader, and if you would ever explore something like that, whether it's, you know, maybe it's not specifically an industrial revolution of sorts, but kind of that progression of technology in your fantasy world, or do you like to stick to that very medieval-esque setting?
Yeah, that's a super interesting question. I have noticed a slight shift, yeah, in some, you know, I think maybe like Sanderson does this a bit in Mistborn. Like it's a little bit, it's past the medieval era, and you know, we're using metals and things like that.
Yeah.
So I think that's like a really cool. I haven't read any of the gentlemen that you listed, but I do enjoy like an industrial revolution style fantasy, and I think that's becoming more popular. It's not something that I have ever really thought about or explored. I think I tend to navigate between like a couple of my stories or potential future novels are either like very much in the sci-fi realm or very much in the medieval sandbox. I think it has to be done well for me personally. I like that if it's a long series, mm-hmm. if the timeline kind of does naturally progress with human progression also in terms of technology, I think that's awesome. And I think it's something that maybe more authors will explore in the future. Maybe us. I don't know. I didn't really live past three books with A Filthy Hunger's kind of like concept. But yeah, that's really interesting to explore. Cause yeah, if like your magic can coincide hand in hand. What was the one? There are a couple recently that have come out that shoot, I'm blanking on what they are.
It's totally fine. And
there have been a couple recently that have come out that are like on my TBR that are mm-hmm. like an industrialized version of like, you know, a fantasy. It's like you've got smokestacks and things like that, but then it's run by magic or something like that. I think it's cool. I think the concept is neat.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a fan. I haven't read a lot about it, like in that regard, but yeah it'd be fun to explore. But yeah, I'm like kind of a classic medieval-esque, like if not medieval, like old Greek Roman style concepts of like,
yeah,
we're still using the wheel.
Yeah. Yeah, totally get it. No. For me, I can kind of go both ways. Like I do tend to lean more towards that medieval setting. I do prefer to kind of stick around in there, but the authors I mentioned I think have done it great, and something that initially I may not have been too like keen on, I found that I really enjoyed reading about. So as far as like writing about it, I don't know. I get very nervous when it comes to like writing about technology for some reason. Yeah. Just because I'm always worried I'm going to get something wrong in that regard. But I suppose when you're working in a fantasy setting, you have a lot more leeway there. So,
yeah.
You can incorporate a lot of magic into like the industrial revolutions and the progression of technology, which I think is really cool.
You know, I think a good like subgenre, and I don't know if it falls into, I don't like logistically / seriously what it falls under. I would consider it under fantasy, but I know some people might consider it under sci-fi. But like steampunk is a really good, I know like there's like less magic and more just like a futuristic steam run world, but like, you know, that's kind of a really interesting genre that I love the aesthetic of personally, because Victorian London is like my favorite, or Victorian era is like my favorite. So yeah, they're out there, and I think, you know, we actually just rewatched it's one of my faves, Howl's Moving Castle, which is written by, and I'm blanking on her name, I'm so sorry, but that's also a really great kind of merger between like industrialized or industrializing its world while still having magic. And yeah, so I think that the potential is there. And I think, as you said, there are authors who are doing it really well. So maybe worth exploring.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Sorry, my document is loading slowly. I don't know why we're having all the technical difficulties today.
Yeah, I think, let's see. Well, yeah, I mean, so you said you like stayed in the medieval sandbox, but is that something that you would like explore later on with A Nine of Knives, or is that kind of just where you're
So initially I thought no, like I really didn't think I would ever progress the world, especially like when it comes to the technology, and I was very set on like having just the main series and that being it. But since then my mind has shifted, like I have some spinoffs I want to write, and I've spent so much time building like the city that most of the stories take place in. Like it's a very large city setting, that I can definitely envision how like an industrial revolution would take place there and sure. how it would affect the setting. So that's gone from like a hard no to, actually that sounds pretty interesting. So
yeah.
I think definitely maybe, down the line, that's something I would like to at least try to explore. Whether or not it ever like actually sees the light of day is another question entirely, but I think reading about those types of settings more, and the more I've kind of fleshed out my own setting for my work, like it's made me more interested in exploring that kind of progression. When I was initially opposed to it, sorry.
No, don't apologize. Because I'm, and now that you're talking about it, like I definitely kind of feel the same way. Like, you know, you do get kind of, you pigeonhole yourself unintentionally into certain just like aesthetics or tropes of the world that you're building, and that makes sense. But as I know what I want in the second and third book, but like, you know, there's going to be some like traveling to different countries or kingdoms and things like that. And I have to decide whether or not I like the concept of the main world or the main country kingdom that my characters exist in almost being like the backward like kingdoms, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like the other places they go to kind of have to deal with the same issues in terms of like magic has been stolen, but like how they adapted to that. I want that to be like a kind of like a shock. It's like, oh, you don't have to just still use the wheel, you can do all of these other things. So
yeah,
now that you bring it up, I'm like, oh yeah, maybe I was already like naturally inclining that way, but not, at least not for like the main characters in their world. So yeah, the potential is awesome.
Yeah, it and I think one of the things that kind of opens me up to that as well, in addition to, you know, reading about those settings, is one of the authors that I mentioned who has done it, Joe Abercrombie, who's one of my favorite fantasy authors, talks about how fantasy authors spend a lot of time creating these worlds that they then kind of have to abandon after like a series is over, unless you go back and do like a spinoff or something. And he's very much of a different mind of like, I've spent so long building this world, I'm probably going to write in it forever. So I think that opened my mind to like a different mindset, or different approach to fantasy storytelling, because I feel like I was always kind of approaching it that way as well. Like, okay, A Knight of Knives, I'm going to write two or three books in this world, and then I have to create another world.
Sure.
Right. So knowing, thinking about it differently, like I don't have to do that, is a refreshing kind of mindset and approach to take into when I'm exploring that world, because it opens up a lot of possibilities.
Yeah, I agree. That's actually like such a great piece of kind of, I don't know, knowledge. It's just like, yeah, you don't, because you do, I've like realized as you're saying this, I'm like, oh yeah, I kind of have just like boxed myself in and just like, okay, maybe like a novella or some sort, but once the third book ends, that's the end of it. But like, maybe it doesn't have to be, maybe it, you know, 400 years, 500 years in the future, or like it just takes place somewhere else, you know, in that realm. And yeah, that's really fascinating. That's a great point.
Well, I think that does it for all of our fantasy writing related topics for the week. Yeah, there were some fun ones in there. But yeah,
2 minutes early. What's going on here?
I think we're getting some grace with the technical difficulties here, maybe.
That's
but
true.
We'll see. Hopefully, I'm able to make sure the recording comes through great. But thanks to everyone who stuck with us through the live. And
Does anyone have any questions if they're still in chat and or topics they want us to discuss? I liked the copyright topic. Maybe in the next couple months we can deep dive into that.
Yeah, for sure.
Put that on the burner because that's a really good topic. So yeah, if there are anything else you want us to touch on in the future. Also, for those who are listening / in the chat, guest forms still open, correct?
Yes.
For coming on to the podcast. We've got the email, we've got the Instagram, so just literally shoot us any topic or question you guys want us to talk about.
Have we gone over research processes? Is a question from Nicole.
Oh.
No, but that would be a fun topic to add to the roster.
We will note this. Because that is a great... I think we touched on the ChatGPT question for research earlier.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to... You don't want to see my Google history. That's like the long short of it.
Yeah. My research process, to sum it up before, you know, we inevitably get into it, a deep dive one day, is a lot of like very distracting rabbit holes that inevitably take me away from writing for way longer than I intended. But
totally agree. I like aim for realism as much as possible. And because I do research for a living and I am like a historian by practice and trade, I'm like,
yeah.
Unfortunately, I think I unintentionally like, I'm using pigeonhole a lot today, but pigeonhole myself into being like, girl, you can be a little relaxed about this. You can just ease up. But I'm like, no, realism. So, a little tease on my process.
Yeah. The thing that always helps me when I'm trying to be like ultra realistic and is something from Brandon Sanderson where he said, like, you don't need to know all the details. You just really need to make the reader think that you do.
Exactly. No, so
that
great.
That always helps. But yeah, I'm one of those people who also really has to be like define all of the details. Like, I have to be the god of my world where I've like set every possible question that a reader would ever ask for the next 100 years.
Because I'm like, I when plot holes happen in books because the world building is not very solid, I'm like, did we think about this? Did we think about this at all? I mean, I'm like, I don't want to be that person, but also it hinders my process as well.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for Quill and Query this week. Ash, thanks so much for everyone who joined us in the chat. Thanks, Ash, as always, for being such a great co-host. And again, apologies to everybody for technical difficulties and the puppy interruption. We'll be back on track next episode because I will be completely moved.
Yes. So, best of luck on the move.
Thank you so much.
I know it's always exhausting and stressful, but hopefully it goes off without a hitch.
Yeah. All right. Well.
All right. Is that it?
Thanks, everybody. Yep. We are good to go.
Bye, guys. All right. Have a good night. See you next time.